The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I'm joined by Gina London, formerly of CNN, now leadership and communications expert and columnist with the Sunday Indo, and Lise Hand, journalist of significant renown in these parts. We are to look at the stories making the news this weekend. There is a lot. There is the prospect of the initial saber rattling around World War III, which is quite something. There's also US politics heading further off the reservation. Before that, though, front page of the Irish Independent, speculation about the date of the election. Majority in Fine Gael expecting a November election in spite of Harris. Lise Hand, can I put a theory to you, which is nobody cares at all. This is an entirely inside the beltway political correspondent thing.
100%. I have absolutely do not disagree with you at all. I know.
No.
He's doing his big surprise face. But you're absolutely right. There is nothing political correspondents love than speculation over an election. They love it. They really absolutely adore it. And particularly over the summer months where really a lot of politics isn't happening, it fills an awful lot of space.
But it's filling it with the exact same sentence where Simon Harris again and again and again says, "I've said March, lads, that's where I still stand."
Well, I mean, obviously to use that famous quote, he would say that, wouldn't he? Because, of course, the thing is, as soon as he goes, yeah, it is, that's it. Like, we're off to the races. Posters are up. No, not a jot of work has got done. There's, nothing is done. No legislation has passed. And so he literally has to keep saying no until he says yes, essentially. Personally, I think November's great because then we can stop talking about it and just get on with it because we're all, sick of it. And I don't think February is a great time for an election anyway because, everybody's visa bill from Christmas comes in the end of January, which means that you're actually more skint in February than you are in January because you're completely cleaned out. And, it's still
cold
dark
and rainy and miserable
and rainy.
Ugh.
I think the last thing you want to see is your local TD at the door. So I think, I think that would be madness now.
Does he lose anything, Gina, if he subsequently does call it for November? Is there any downside to having said a million times I'm planning March and then doing something different?
No, not at all. For the same reasons you were just saying, Lise, that people will come to the polls when there's an election. They will make their decision. The usual back time from the time you announce to the time you're going to have it is 5 to 6 weeks here in Ireland, which God love you for having a short political cycle, which we're just experiencing in the US probably for the first time.
Well, you've lengthened yours now to 4 years, which is quite something.
But if you back time to like October 1st, right after the budget comes out, then that's probably when we're going to see an announcement. And also keep in the back of your mind when you see Sinn Féin polls go up to 26, that could also trigger a call. So as he continues to say no, and everybody else seems to say yes, we'll wait and see, and there'll be more articles made.
Now, the other place where there is speculation, and Lise, I want your view on this because you have covered a lot of elections. The notion that somehow the budget is going to have a direct impact. Is there any evidence ever in the history of Irish politics that a giveaway budget significantly changes the mood or decision making of the electorate? Because I struggle to point to one.
Yeah, I would definitely struggle to find. I mean, for a start, the obvious thing is eaten bread is soon forgotten, and it might be great announcement on the day, but people are they very do quickly forget. And even if measures are brought in and announced on budget day, it's often months before they actually kick in the new year or whatever as well. So people don't necessarily feel it in their pockets. And I don't really think it sways the public mind. People tend to be very they're concentrated on one particular thing. It could be education, it could be hospitals, it could be, something specific. And I'm not sure talk of money being thrown at that has any effect. I think, results are what they like to, people are more concerned about rather than vague promises. So, I'm really not sure. I think another reason perhaps that an autumn election is slightly more likely as well is that it also takes away this particular administration's the problem of what to do with the Apple money as well, because that won't arrive on, in the doorstep. They can't spend it now because they don't have it.
So, 13 billion quid is in the post, I'm sure somebody will lend you a few quid.
I suppose they might see you going until then. All right. But, there's already a massive queue of people with their hand out going, we need this, we need that, we need the other. So they have enough of a headache trying to deal with this budget without having sort of the hands out next year and trying to keep everybody happy as well. It may behove them to say, let's have a fresh administration in to kind of deal with that. But yeah, I'm not really sure that, people really care, really are swayed by the notion of their purse being swelled. Really don't think so.
The other thing, of course, is he's in a slightly unusual position in that he can't completely, I assume he can't completely surprise his coalition partners. The Indo says that everybody that they have spoken to in the backbenches and around says that the November is the expectation with the budget, with the election to be called shortly after the budget on October 1st. And they're acknowledging, according to the Indo, Gina, that the Fianna Fáil would need to be on side before an announcement is made.
Well, of course, what you say in the public isn't always what you're saying with your coalition and your other members and trying to get things organised in private. I mean, we all know that. And so, as a former member of the press myself, we do the best we can with the sources that we have, but it doesn't always mean that we know exactly what's going on. But if you are trying to make a coalition that is going to stand against the opposition, then of course you're going to want to have your current partners on board in some way. Otherwise, back to messaging and campaigning, you're going to come out of the gate disconnected. And that certainly isn't going to send a good message and bring people out to the polls in the way you would like them to go.
It was Bertie, wasn't it, that snuck up to the Irish and very early one morning, caught everybody on the hop, and that didn't really work out too well for him. I think that was
but that was still where you had coalition partners where one had a significant position of primacy. I think those days may be gone. Front of the Irish Daily Mail, Lisa, Zelensky, stop delays and let us fire missiles into Russia. This is Keir Starmer and Joe Biden in the White House discussing mutual responses, connected responses to the Ukraine and Russia war. And what effectively Zelensky is saying is, give us the right to fire long-range missiles bought from NATO countries into Moscow. And the mood music from Vladimir Putin is, you do that and it's World War III.
Yeah, it's all gone a bit hairy. And there's a school of thought saying that Putin was that belligerent as almost to act as a deterrent. This is what some people are saying. They're saying, look, he's doing this to basically stop this happening because there are enormous vulnerabilities, and an awful lot of bases and a lot of places they store their weapons are within range of these particular missiles. So the reason he's coming out is, you know, so strongly is really to nip that talk in the bud. Joe Biden was fairly bullish about it, just saying, you know, I don't really have a lot of time for Putin and so on. And at the same time going, we have not made any decision whether we're going to use these. They seem to be at the same time dismissing Putin and at the same time not giving the green light for these missiles to be used. It's a really dangerous, massively tense tightrope that these guys are dancing along, because, I mean, you know, we've all sort of, you know, historians will always point to things, something like, you know, World War One, where, you know, a small event turned into a cascade of events, turned into a global conflict. And you just have to sort of, there's so many moving parts and there's so many tense pockets of tension. There's so many potential routes for disaster. It's
even when you look at the Cuban missile crisis and how close we all came to disaster on that.
Absolutely. And I mean, that was just probably averted because there were a few, you know, smart people around that actually refused to go along with this whole cascade of events and said, look, let's see, can we stop this?
And there was also a relationship. I mean, it may have been a very fraught relationship, but I get the sense there was a little bit of back channel trust there that isn't there now.
Exactly. There was good back channel relations that they were able to go behind this. But there's just a sort of sense that those aren't there now. And you have an America that is massively distracted by this election as well at the same time. And, you know, you have that sense of an administration in flux because people's minds are on the election, you know, within months, a whole new raft of people will be coming in as well. It's very, very hairy.
Guaranteed Biden's not going to make any decision about going in with the UK and thereby going in with NATO back to coalition building on his own 52 days before a presidential election, when you've got former President Trump talking about World War III himself in the debate this week. And you've got now Putin on the other side. And we know, of course, the bromance between those two guys. There are going to be a big distance between Biden and giving any sort of fodder to Putin during this time, because it has the ripple effect of not only NATO, but of course, the jeopardizing what they hope, the Democrats hope.
But is the flip side of that then not that it's great advantage for Putin? Because if he believes what you believe, then he knows he has a 50-something day interregnum to do as he wants.
Well, I think I don't know that he will do what he wants, because I think there's a bit of a stalemate still going on. I don't think he has the power in terms of the military strength right now because of the alignment around Ukraine. I don't think he's going to see just the U.S. and just just his alliance, whatever, with Trump. However, I do think that you're going to see in a couple of weeks in the United Nations of the General Assembly in New York, when everybody convenes there, that then you're going to see if you can build a wider agreement and support around these long-range firing missiles to be fired in Russia. And that in of itself is buying more time, getting towards more certainty or more of a momentum on that election, but still pushing and talking about the potential of it is also enough, I think, to keep Putin back away from launching big counterattacks. But let's not forget that this whole idea of, well, if you do this, this is NATO. Putin largely does what he wants anyway.
And the Kremlin isn't mincing its words. I mean, Kremlin sources, as Kremlin official statement saying, if long-range missiles are fired in, quotes, NATO will be a direct party to hostilities against a nuclear power.
Well,
this whole nuclear, the threat of nuclear war is huge. I mean, of course, it's always something that you have to think. Is he that volatile? Is he that unpredictable? Would he fire something in some way that sets off this chain of events?
It's also interesting to see how much in terms of foreign policy hinges on the results of this election. I mean, obviously, US, whoever is in power in the US has long-term foreign policy and global strategic impact. But it's not often that you see Israel and Gaza waiting to see which way this election goes, and Ukraine and Russia waiting to see which way it goes.
Well, yeah, Gina did refer to this, and she's completely correct. I mean, any pronouncements that Donald Trump has made on what he would do about the Ukraine-Russia situation have been pretty clear, basically saying that it would be, you know, effectively he would bring about the unconditional surrender of Ukraine to Russia. I mean, more or less in the, you know, in that, using that language, he would just sort of orchestrate an outcome that would basically give victory to Russia. And that is obviously playing into the way that the thinking is. You're completely correct. I mean, there's two conflicts that are literally waiting to see the outcome of this election. And there's and yet within the American electors, and maybe Gina would know more about this than I would, but there tends to be a disconnect among the American voters of just the importance of the global importance of and the consequences of these.
Geopolitics is largely on a global scale is largely lost by the general, the average American voter, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, that the fact that there was even a talk about it at all in terms of the debate is because there are two big conflicts going on. If it had not been conflicts, there'd have been nothing. Maybe the tariffs from the economy standpoint. But again, that's only to help the United States. But the nationalism and the focus inward in the United States, especially on the Republican MAGA side, is very, very strong. So now, they don't have that.
On the topic of the debate and the Republican
MAGA
side.
Yes, here we go.
I have been looking forward to talking to you because for some time ago.
I stayed up all night on Tuesday. I am still sleep deprived.
You were on this program and you described your mother, who you undoubtedly love dearly and have a good relationship with, but her capacity to remain wedded to the MAGA cause, despite protestations from friends and family to go the other way. Did the debate sway her?
She has already said she is not a MAGA. She is a one-issue voter, and that is abortion. But she also, and she voted, as I've said before, everyone, my poor mother. But she lives in Ohio now. I was just in Ohio 3 weeks ago.
Oh my God, are her cats okay?
Just in Ohio 3 weeks ago, moving her and my stepdad into continuing care near where my sister lives. So I was just in Ohio in that state, not near Springfield. And my mother does own two cats. So fascinating. But she voted for Trump in 16 and 20. But the insurrection changed everything for her. So she said, no way. And I was just talking to her yesterday. And I said, what'd you think about the debate? And she said, I am for sure voting for Kamala Harris, but I am not voting. I'm voting against Trump, and I will, in order to vote for Kamala, because she doesn't like my mom's is anti-abortion.
And would she stay Republican down ticket then?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. And that's something that's interesting. And it also leads us into the down ticket voting issue in some of these swing states that can influence that top line. So when you look at, in fact, if we can jump into North Carolina, we talk about what's the path to 270? What's the path to get the electoral college votes that are needed to win this election on November 5th? And you look at some of the swing states we always hear about, Michigan and Wisconsin, of course, Pennsylvania, where the debate was held. But North Carolina, which was just 1 point over Biden for Trump in 2020, now has a real potential to go for Kamala Harris this year, because we've got the down ticket vote on governor has got lots of play in that state and even nationally. We've got the attorney general, Joel Stein.
Oh, no, sorry.
And we've got the lieutenant governor, Mark Robinson. Now, Mark Robinson is a right-wing MAGA.
Total crazy,
who
talks
anti. He denies the Holocaust. He said that women have abortions because, quote, they couldn't keep their skirts down. Yeah. There were recently some stories about how ironically, I guess, as a very strong conservative, as he proclaims, he was daily going to this porn shop in the 90s. A lot of employees say we remember him very well as a customer who would bring pizza into the booths. But so what's the point of that is that there is double digit lead with Joel Stein right now to take this governorship. And that brings more people out to the polls on the Democrat side, which could turn North Carolina. So the path to 270 has gotten more interesting in this election. And a lot of discussion about the debate is certainly ratcheting up.
This brings up your mother's cats and their relative safety. One of the things that has been the legacy of the debate was Donald Trump's suggestion that Haitian immigrants in Ohio are abducting people's domestic pets and eating them. This is, of course, not true, but nonetheless, it has gotten an awful lot of traction. Pete Buttigieg on CNN, this is Transport Secretary and formerly somebody who was thought of as a possible and still possible runner for presidency into the future. He says, Lise, that this is a deliberate strategy, that this is a way to get us talking about whatever daft thing Donald Trump has said most recently and not anything material to do with his record. Do you buy that?
No. I mean, look, this is a classic an absolute classic case of how misinformation, disinformation just goes viral and wild. Generally, this thought that this particular story probably started in mid-August when a woman was arrested in another town in Cleveland, in Canton, in Ohio. She was American. She was a black woman, and she was arrested having, I don't know, stomped on a cat's head or something. A cat was dead. Obviously, it wasn't very pleasant. There was some video came out. That sort of started doing the rounds. And at the same time...
And mislabeled as a Haitian. That's where... That starts the whole racism, immigration divide. Sorry, at least.
Her color allowed people to do that.
Exactly.
But we have black American citizens.
Exactly. Right. And that was picked up and it was conflated with another post that went up on Reddit, I think it was. And it was... A random somebody put it up saying, look at the things you see walking down the road. And it was a picture of, again, a black man walking with no caption, nothing, just with a dead goose or duck or something under his arm, right down the street. That was it. The two of those stories seemed to get conflated. It was picked up by some neo-Nazi groups who then started going, Haitians are killing animals. This was then started doing the rounds on social media and through Reddit and all that. It was then picked up by J.D. Vance, who decided to go public with this, they're killing animals at a rally.
Himself an Ohioan.
Himself an Ohio, an Ohioan. And then this was picked up by Donald Trump. All the city, various officials came out and, they said, no, this is not true. And again, Springfield has now become a kind of the poster boy for this whole tension between the massive issue of immigration into America, undocumented migrants coming in over the southern border, 11 million are estimated to have come in. It behoves the Republicans to flam this up as a massive issue. So by taking what is a huge issue, which is people can't get their head around that number, it's much easier to take something like this and turn it into a small micro story with graphic kind of, examples that people can kind of get their head around. And it's causing real trouble. I mean, they had to evacuate an elementary school in Springfield yesterday. They had to evacuate City Hall, I think it was, because there were racist threats and bomb threats phoned in. So this has become a massively volatile situation. And now you have rumours that, Trump is thinking about going in to visit the poor people of Springfield, Ohio, as if they haven't suffered enough already. So... But that's how an online rumor and is.
But I suppose the question then is
information. Is this, I haven't asked your question though,
No, absolutely.
How strategic are they about it?
Is this a daft rumor or is this a dog whistle?
I think it's a dog whistle. I think it's red meat to the red MAGAs. I think they stepped in it. I don't think no debate prep person for Trump said, hey, throw in the dog comment and the cat comment in the middle of the discussion in the debate. That was a complete loose cannon moment that we expect from Trump. And as many crazy memes there are out there, I think then now they're doubling down. Because Trump is never going to ever admit that anything isn't true. And they're good. I think they are now trying to turn this into a story of us against them. And here's our, we're going to prove that this
and
is
JD
true.
And J.D. Vance has been asked about it a number of times, and he keeps saying, it's up to the media
We've gotten calls about it. Well, of course. And the reporter from the Mail that went there, Greg Woodfield, that story of him going there and talking to somebody. Look, I was in Cincinnati just 3 weeks ago. I'm from Indiana. I know these small communities, and I know this feeling of us versus them and how easy it is to get a few people sound bites and then you throw those out and suddenly you've got the whole tenor of something, which isn't necessarily true. When the mayor, who happens to be white, of Springfield says, these immigrants, and there's a 15,000 strong community of Haitian immigrants that have settled into the 50 plus thousand community of Springfield, are adding to our economy. They have brought our city that has lost a lot of jobs through manufacturing. They are bringing this town back. They are showing up to work on time. There's an Amazon plant there and they're reliable. And so that message isn't getting out because it's not nearly as scandalous and horrific as, hey, they're eating our cats and dogs.
I know we're now several days into being familiar with it, but every time it gets said, it just sounds so daft. We are staying with daft things, Lise, I don't know what your view is on this, but the Botox we have long known about as being a popular cosmetic thing, as well as very important in terms of some health conditions. Little did we know you could have it for your feet.
Yeah, it's this sort of story is just, as the young would say, it gives me the ick slightly. It's
cringe.
It is a bit cringe.
Why would you want Botox in your feet?
Well, this would be to facilitate the wearing of high heels for longer periods of time. I presume it's known as this kind of, they actually call it the stiletto lift. So it allows, I mean, I haven't worn.
As in it deadens your foot, is that it?
Yeah, this seems to be, it seems to, yeah, I mean, it seems to give you extra height and, you know, so you can, I'm mystified by this.
I don't wear high heels a lot, so maybe explain this. Is it that it kills the pain and allows you?
It kills the pain because if you are in a pair of, say, serious Louboutins, right, Christian Louboutin, right, which is that you see them the black with the red kind of under heel. You often see them on the red carpets.
These Sex are in the City, we're into them.
The very one.
Jimmy Choo's.
Jimmy Choo's. Like
Malonos.
You're in nosebleed territory here. I mean, you're sort of elevated by about 6 inches. Now, that's fine if you're just going from limo, you know, to car to bar, as they say. But I mean, if you have to hang around for hours in these things, you know, you're going to need something to dull the pain. I mean, it's absolutely insane. I mean, I'm speaking as somebody who is A, 6 foot, and B, hasn't, I think I've worn stilettos maybe twice since COVID.
You must be very impressive stature when you put on the stilettos.
I am frightening.
Formidable.
With a bit of hairspray, I really am ready, good to go.
Gina, before we wrap up, there is one thing as well which is worth mentioning, which is the regular yearly Ig Nobel Prize has been awarded. This is the prize for genuine science,
yes,
but of a daft nature.
Well, you know, daft is in the eye of the beholder. So, yes, take you to MIT in Massachusetts on Thursday. And there are actual Nobel laureates who present these prizes. They've been going on since the 90s. And every year there are real research elements, as you mentioned, that are being feted for the wackiness of a pigeon-led missile system or a difference between drunk and sober worms. And this one that actually won the prize this year, back to Ohio, I'm telling you, the vortex of things is Ohio this week. An actual research element by a legit doctor in Cincinnati, which happens to be where my sister and her husband are from. I don't know if her husband's a doctor. I don't know if he works with this guy. But the research is actually called, here it is, enteral ventilation. And it could be a new paradigm in human patients with respiratory failure. Now, why it gets the Ig Nobel Award is because the research looked at mice, rats, and pigs and found you can actually get them to absorb oxygen through their rectums. So it's anus absorption of oxygen. And the doctor said he was mixed emotions about getting this award because he feels it's legit. But when you talk about it on the face of it, it's pretty comical.
So you're in respiratory failure. We can treat you, but there's good news and bad news. You
know, we just don't want to take a crack at talking about it more.
No, thank you very much. On that note, Gina London, leadership communications expert and Sunday Indo columnist, and Lise Hand, journalist. Thank you both very much.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.